This is BBC Radio 3. It's 4 o'clock and time now for the first of our Saturday jazz programmes. I should point out that jazz lineup won't be followed immediately by jazz record requests today. JRR, as we like to refer to it, will be later this evening at 9 o'clock after the opera. So now here's Julian Joseph with this week's edition of Jazz Lineup.
Hello,
and that's a flavour of what's coming up on today's show with previously unbroadcast music from a performance by pianist Mark Edwards and his band Clogs, recorded earlier this year at the 2015 South Coast Jazz Festival. I'll also be joined by Kevin Legendre for his Now's the Time feature, which this month shines a spotlight on bassist Jonas Hellborg's 1991 album, The Word. It features master drummer Tony Williams. Bassist Jonas Hellborg and drummer Tony Williams, and more from that album later on the show. Plus, Sebastian Scotney will be profiling 25 years of the Audio B record label, which has brought some remarkable artists to the fore, including Tim Garland with Chick Corea, Cleo Lane and John Dankworth, and the pianist Kate Williams, just to name a few. And stay tuned for some news about this year's UNESCO International Jazz Day, happening on April the 30th. First up, as we're in a celebratory mood, something from the incomparable Billie Holiday, who would turn 100 this year. This is What a Little Moonlight Can Do.
Thank you.
Billie Holiday in 1935, and What a Little Moonlight Can Do. She's on top form, and she's surrounded by a bevy of superstars, including Benny Goodman on clarinet, Ben Webster on the tenor saxophone, Roy Eldridge on trumpet, Cozy Cole on drums, John Kirby on the bass, and Teddy Wilson on piano. That's from a superb release called Billie Holiday, the Centennial Collection, available now on the OK Record label. And you can still catch Jazz Record Request's special Billie Holiday program on the iPlayer. So check that out. Well, from 100 years since the birth of Lady Day to the UNESCO International Jazz Day, which enters its fourth year with a big celebration on April the 30th. UNESCO stands for the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, and its purpose is to promote peace through the arts, sciences and education. And Herbie Hancock is the UNESCO Goodwill Ambassador, and Paris is the home base for the International Jazz Day for concerts that will be webcast for all to see. There'll be an opening ceremony in the morning and a roundtable discussion in the afternoon that includes Ambassador Hancock with bassist Marcus Miller. That's all happening in Paris. But there are events happening all over the world. And in the UK, there are a whole host of events in Derry, Glasgow and many other cities. In Hull, at the Truck Theatre, Christine Tobin performs her I Love Elise programme in celebration of iconic Brazilian vocalist Elise Regina. Robin Eubanks performs with the Human Revolution Orchestra at the Union Chapel in London. Well, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's many more events. So for more information, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. Well, here's something from Goodwill Ambassador Hancock. This is I Have a Dream. Thank you.
Thank you.
Where else would you hear the full 11 minutes of that fantastic track, I Have a Dream, from Herbie Hancock in 1968, from his album The Prisoner, on the Blue Note label, with solos from Joe Henderson on tenor saxophone, Johnny Coles on trumpet and Hancock on the piano. And I'm certain the celebration of jazz through and with UNESCO is the realization of a dream for their goodwill ambassador. As ever, congratulations and well done to Herbie. International Jazz Day is April the 30th, and for more information on International Jazz Day, listen to Jazz on 3 on Monday the 27th of April at 11 p.m. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph, on FM, online and on digital radio. In his first piece for Jazz Lineup, journalist Sebastian Scotney has been looking into the small musician-led record label Audio B, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. To set the scene, here's a taster from one of the releases on the label, Monk's Mood, performed by Tim Garland and Chick Corea.
The label is run by Malcolm Creese, who has been and still is a professional bassist, working at a high level and with great people, and many of the recordings have been interwoven with his career. His story is in some ways representative, typical of the way musicians in this country make things happen. They instigate, they see things through. And if you add it up, 25 years, that whole 25 years, there's quite some achievement there. These days, a lot of his time is taken up with his role as the artistic director of the Swaledale Festival, which is held in late May and early June in the beautiful northern Yorkshire Dales. But his label Audio B has been going for 25 years, so I thought it would be interesting to find out more about what has kept Malcolm Creese and his label Tick for all this time, and to try to tell at least some of the story.
Well, I was involved as a player in all sorts of projects which we realised would benefit from being recorded. Firstly, to use as a calling card of some kind, you know, to go out and get work with and give to people. Also, a way of getting airplay and a way of getting reviews in the media, which are really useful to musicians. So a couple of bands I was playing with, you know, really needed this, and nobody else was going to do it. So I thought, well, let's see if we can make our own recording and have a go at being a record label.
He's like a lot of other people who make their contribution to jazz in the UK. What they're really seeking to achieve is to help build careers, rather than looking first and foremost for the whole endeavour to make monetary sense. Tim Garland describes that well.
If he likes an idea, he will go out of his way to try and champion it for you, sort of irrespective really of its sort of commercial appeal on the surface, because it's for the sake of the art.
People like Malcolm Creese care first that the music should happen and that it should live. You could say that it's ecology and artistic value first, with economics either second, or you might be tempted to say last. I asked Malcolm Creese about how that balance works.
Yeah, you've got to be prepared to spend a lot of time and energy and money, really, in most cases, unless you're very lucky or a lot more skillful than I've been. But I think I've always thought of it as a sideline, as an important tool, but not a main source of income or anything. You know, it's not what it does. It's,
so the ethos behind it is to give recognition and to help musicians along with what they do. Is that the heart of it?
Or yeah, it is. That's one of the main reasons. I think the other reason is to preserve a lot of great music. You know, if we hadn't recorded all the things that we've recorded over the years, 30-odd albums, that music we wouldn't be able to listen to it, you know. So I mean, we've preserved a lot of things that are very special. You know, some of the people have died, sadly, and some of the bands are not in existence anymore, and people have moved on to do different projects. And I'm really pleased that we stopped and preserved a moment of magic for lots of great musicians, mostly British jazz musicians, not entirely, but mostly.
A small label like Audio B is definitely part of something much bigger in this country. Our very diverse scene is the way it is because it is the sum of many parts. A and a lot of those are very small. Just look at it this way. It's not just the fact that there are many other labels run by jazz musicians in Britain. I can underline the point, there are at least three and a half that are run by jazz bassists. There's Andy Kleindert's Trio Records, there's Whirlwind Recordings run by Michael Janish, there's Alison Rayner's Blow the Fuse, and the half would be Jazzes It, which Jeff Gascoigne runs with his wife Trudy Kerr. So the components are small. These are not even at the scale of small enterprises, which have 10 to 50 employees, and they're not even quite micro businesses up to 10. These labels are normally dependent on the drive and the directive energy and the skill of just one person. I was curious how the label originally got its name in 1990, 25 years ago. At that time, the CD had only been around commercially for about 5 years, so it really was quite literally a shiny new thing. So Malcolm Crease first wanted to call the label ABCD, but found that the name had already been taken. So Audio B was the name he chose, which sort of kept that original ABCD idea intact. He's basically run it almost entirely by himself alongside his bass playing. The story of the label is very much bound up with Malcolm Crease's career as a musician, to the point where he describes it as an important sideline or even an add-on to his career. Malcolm Crease explains the background to that.
After school, I went to the Guildhall for a while to study cello. I didn't convert to double bass until my mid-20s, actually. I picked up a bass and thought, oh, this is more fun in some ways than the cello, which I struggled with for years. So I became a bass player a bit later on. I left college early, actually, and went and got a job in a record shop, and I think that probably had a big effect on my decision to start a label much later on.
And so what were record shops in the, what was this, the late 70s, early 80s? What was that like?
Well, there was no CD, of course, in those days. It was all vinyl and cassettes. And I suppose recorded music was, you know, sold in massive quantities then. I think it's probably diminished over the years now that people are downloading and sharing and things. But it was a vibrant scene. It was I worked in two or three different branches of the same company, and I wound up being the manager of a record shop in Wembley. It was a marvellous scene. Lots of musicians used to come in. We were playing music all day long, and we sold musical instruments too, so there'd be jam sessions going on in there. It was a really good, fun time, actually. I learnt a lot.
As a bassist, he had 5 to 6 years as a member of Stan Tracy's group, and 4 years playing with Acca Bilk, and 11 years with the John Dankworth Clear Lane Band. The influence of the Dankworths, their sort of centrality in British jazz, from the touring bands to the all-music programme at Wavendon, is a recurring theme in a lot of musicians' lives. The Dankworths' level of activity on both sides of the Atlantic just kept going. I asked Malcolm Crease about the two albums on the label that he made with the Dankworths.
Yes, we did an album for John's quintet, and then a bit later on he asked me to do one for Cleo, so we did an album called Christmas at the Stables. Which is, I'm very proud of that. I'm mad about Cleo. She's wonderful, and I still keep in touch with her. And it's a good album.
This is a typical Dankworth project, involving new arrangements for which both John Dankworth himself and Andy Panay are credited. Here's Thad Jones's A Child Is Born with a violin contribution from Chris Garrick.
Morning.
Child is Born from Cleo Lane in an arrangement jointly and rather beautifully done by John Dankworth and Andy Panay. Alongside established artists like the Dankworths, the label has kept close to the projects of alto saxophonist Matt Waits, whose latest album Yemanji was released in February this year. It's also been a sort of launch pad for younger players. The pianist Kate Williams made her recording debut on the label, as did another pianist, Alciona Mick. Malcolm Crease explains the background to that.
Yes, I'm very fond of her. She's a really interesting player and composer, slightly quirky in a really good way. I like her very much. And she's been to a couple of times to the festival I run in Yorkshire, Swaledale Festival, in the beautiful dales of North Yorkshire. More recently, in fact, last year she came and played for two silent films. Always wanted to put a grand piano in a cinema, and it's not always easy, but I found a way of doing that. And she came up and played for a Charlie Chaplin film and a really unusual Man Ray abstract film from the late 20s, I think. And she did a partly improvised and partly composed soundtrack, live soundtrack to those two films, and it was marvellous. You know. Yeah, she's a very special musician, Alciona.
That was Monkey from Alciona Mick's debut album Around the Sun, which was issued about 10 years ago, and it definitely shows that quirky imagination at work. One of the important projects in which Malcolm Crease has played that has featured on Audio B is Acoustic Triangle. In an early format, it had Tony Coe and John Haller, and later it was with Tim Garland and Gwilym Simcock. The album Catalyst was recorded in 2003, just a matter of weeks after Gwilym Simcock had graduated from the Royal Academy of Music. One of the tracks from that album is a charming composition called Rosa Ballerina. Tim Garland explains the origins of it.
Rosa, my daughter, she's now 18. I first wrote Rosa Ballerina in this very room. I had a piano over there. And she was 1 year old, and it was called Bella Rosa, the piece. And then when she was about five, she got into ballet, as little girls often do, and I renamed the piece Rosa Ballerina because there was an Italian restaurant that opened up called Bella Rosa quite near us. So it became Rosa Ballerina, and since then has been asked for many times, and I've recorded it on about four different albums.
And in the version that's on Catalyst, it slows down at the end, and what's that about?
Yeah, I think that's probably on all of the versions. It's really, I suppose, there's an image of a ballerina, you know, the little wind-up ballerina that starts to slow down as it unwinds and very, very slowly comes to a halt, indicating perhaps, you know, the child is sleeping, etc. It's very sweet. I love it because it's one of those moments where you can really use the acoustics of the room. Acoustic Triangle was always a band that totally valued the spaces that it played in, and this was something which always flattered the room.
That was Tim Garland's tune Rosa Ballerina, Acoustic Triangle, from the album Catalyst, which was Gwilym Simcock's first recording. When I spoke to Malcolm Crease, he was looking forward to welcoming Gwilym Simcock and also Leanne Carroll and drummer Dave Ohm to play in the festival in a concert in Influence Church in Richmond. It'll be the one occasion where he'll get to play in his own festival, Swaledale Festival, that he's the director of. And I noticed he had a glint in his eye as he talked about Wedding Music, which is a duo of Kit Downs and the Yorkshire-born saxophonist Tom Challenger. So here's to the next 25 years of Audio B, and who knows what further inspiration might come from the beauty of those Yorkshire dales.
Sebastian Scotney ending his report there about the 25th anniversary of the Audio B label. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph, on FM, online and on digital radio. Well, brand new from trombonist Dennis Rollins with his Velocity Trio, this is the title track of his new album, Symbiosis. Thank you. The music of trombone man Dennis Rollins and his Velocity Trio, who are the homegrown Ross Stanley on organ and Portuguese powerhouse Pedro Segundo on the drums. That was Symbiosis from their brand new album, out now on Dog with a Bone Music. Now stay tuned to Radio 3 for more jazz later with Jazz Record Requests presented by Alan Shipton at a slightly different time than usual. Here's Alan with the lowdown on what's coming up on today's programme.
Hello, Julian. Well, this week, owing to an early start for Cav and Pag from the Met, I'll be here at 9 tonight with music from Martin Taylor and Kevin Thiges, plus concert memories of Kid Ory and Billie Holiday in England. So do join me, Alan Shipton, for Jazz Record Requests at 9 o'clock.
Thanks, Alan. Sounds like a great show lined up, and we'll be sure to check out that programme later on BBC Radio 3. Next up, I'm pleased to say I'm joined by Kevin Legendre for his regular monthly feature Now's the Time, where he places a warm glow on a classic album of recent times. Kevin, what have you got for us this month?
We're going back to 1991 with a really unique album. It's Jonas Hellborg, The Word, and it's a very, very interesting fusion of jazz, rock and Arabic music.
What's the first piece?
The first piece is Soti Samad, which really, I think, makes a case for this record as something which has a unique sound world. You've got Jonas Hellborg, this Swedish bass player, who plays an acoustic bass guitar with Tony Williams, the great Tony Williams, on drums, and a string quartet, the Soldier String Quartet. And what they do is bring together all of these different influences. You can hear Hendrix, you can hear Tony Williams' Lifetime, this great sort of rock fusion group that he had, and you hear this Arabic string tradition. You listen to this track and you hear the way that Jonas starts with this really heavy rolling bass line. Tony has a swinging but also rocky feel in his drums. And then listen to the way the strings just come in very, very majestically, as if they introduce all of this air into the music. They make the music rise. And the other players are kind of making it very, very rock solid and very, very funky.
Okay, well, let's listen to, from the album The Word from 1991 by Jonas Hellborg, this is Soti Samad. Thank you. Jonas Hellborg, and you heard Tony Williams on drums. That was Soti Samad, and that's the Sufi for the sound that intoxicates man. Wow. So strong Eastern melodically.
Absolutely.
There's that interjection of the strings, but the strength that lies between the combination between Tony Williams
the
and
the bass
Jonas.
And drums, yeah, yeah. They're really locked in. As with all the great groove albums, which is what this is, despite the melodic sophistication, it's a great groove record too. You have to have that relationship, that chemistry, that telepathy between the drummer and the bass player, which is what you have here. The other thing which is really interesting is how there are a lot of overdubs used. He plays sometimes very, very low. He'll set up a low rolling line, maybe using his E string a lot or playing a lot of open notes. And then you'll hear the really high, almost oud-like guitar that he uses, the bass guitar, which brings out this guitar quality. I mean, that's the interesting thing. He's got an acoustic bass guitar. It's almost like he's splitting it into bass and guitar. So you've got the lower register and the upper register together, and it creates this unique sound world.
The strong guitar approach is a significant portion to Hellborg's style.
As Stanley Clark once said, that the thing about a bass guitar which people overlook, it's so obvious, is that it's a guitar.
It's a guitar.
As well as a bass. And he's got an acoustic bass guitar.
So tell us a little bit about Jonas Hellborg.
He first came to prominence working with the producer of this album, Bill Laswell, mm-hmm. who's a very important part of the process as well. There was a project called Deadline that Jonas was involved in, produced by Bill Laswell. Also, another album by Ginger Baker called Middle Passage that Jonas played on. And I think he made quite an impression. People realized straight away that there was something special going on, certainly with this unique instrument that very few people play. And then when the idea of him doing a solo record produced by Bill Laswell came up, it seemed to fall into place, I think, quite organically. The other thing which is very important is that you've got the spirit of Jimi Hendrix running through this record. There's also a cover of Cherokee Mist by Jimi Hendrix. I like to think of this as the album that Hendrix might have made had he played with Tony in Marrakesh.
Use your imagination.
Absolutely.
Well, the Ginger Baker connection and then the connection with Tony Williams, it seems that he really can get under the skin and get in the mix with great drummers.
Yeah. Yeah, as we said before, the relationship between the two of them is absolutely key. But I think what's also really good is that as much as they lock in very tightly to the pulse and they're very unified, you hear the freedom as well.
Well, that's what it's about.
They just solo quite liberally throughout the record too, as well as having these really tight grooves.
So important that you get to that space that they create on this record. And as you look at the whole record as a piece of work, what are the things that really stick out for you?
The things that stick out for me first and foremost are, I suppose, the combination of the bass and drums and the strings. At times, I feel that the strings, even though it's a quartet, they work as one instrument. So it's like a power trio. But with that third instrument, after the bass and drums, being played by these four different musicians. So the strings at times, they have this very, very strong, almost like a guitar-like or a piano-like quality, as if they're really one voice alongside these two other voices. I think that's the thing that hit me the most.
Yeah, it really does work well, this combination of sounds, this kind of orchestration. So next up, what have we got?
We've got
something much more groove oriented.
Yeah, there's a very heavy feel to this kind of backbeat, slow rock funk quality that you hear in Two Rivers. Again, it's a real contrast to the previous track. But listen to the swish quality of the strings and also the very eerie nature of the sounds that they produce. About 1:28 into the track, you'll hear the strings take on a completely different character and becomes very haunting.
Well, this is Two Rivers. Jonas Hellborg, and that was Two Rivers from the album The Word. And what a lovely coda just at the end of that piece, eh, Kevin?
It's absolutely majestic. I think that combination is like grit and grace, those two elements that you get in the music. It's very, very heavy, very raunchy at times. It's like acoustic rock. It's unplugged rock fusion. Yet at the same time, you have the majesty of the strings coming in, these contrasts that they create at very, very strategic points in the music. It really works.
What was going on in the musical landscape at the time?
Well, 1991, if you think about it, Bill Laswell, to me, is a key progressive in music, as somebody who, with his Axiom label, which is what this record is on, is really bringing together all kinds of traditions. He's engaging with a lot of Middle Eastern and African musicians. He's dealing with electronics. He's working with jazz musicians. I think this is the time, the early 90s, which people forget, where things really had opened up a lot, and the quote-unquote influence of world music was really permeating some progressive people, not just in jazz, but in electronic music as well. And he was somebody who's right in the middle of it all, I think.
And this album is such a great representation, then, of the entire musical landscape.
Absolutely. In terms of several vocabularies and several approaches to music coming together, I think it really is successful here. I don't think there's any compromise at all.
The sound sort of seeps in and out of rock. I think we should also mention that it's the Soldier String Quartet.
Absolutely. Laura Seaton on first violin, David Soldier on violin, Ron Lawrence on viola, and Mary Wootton on cello.
Well, these guys, the string quartet, Tony Williams and Jonas Hellborg, they create a really firm universe of their own.
Absolutely. And the thing about this album as well, which we shouldn't overlook, is that a lot of these tracks are very short. The ability to really tell a story, which is very powerful, very vivid, very punchy, with these concise parameters, 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes, I think they've upheld that absolutely to the letter here.
Well, let's hear how they get on with the last track. But before we do that, Kevin, thank you so much for sharing this great album with us.
Absolutely my pleasure.
This is Jonas Hellborg from the album The Word and Poets. Poets from the 1991 album of Jonas Hellborg, The Word, which prominently features the genius of Tony Williams on drums and the strings of the Soldier String Quartet. And my thanks to Kevin Legendre for his insights and enthusiasm for this month's Now's the Time selection. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph, on FM, online and on digital radio. Well, now to our concert set, which features more music from pianist Mark Edwards and his band The Clogs. Last month, we heard some highlights of a set recorded at the South Coast Jazz Festival by the Ensemble, which featured compositions by Tom Waits, Brad Meldow, and Ennio Morricone. The music on this short set tonight features compositions mostly from Edwards himself, with The Clogs exploring the folk, tango, theatrical, and cinematic influences that are the group's signature sound. Recorded at the Rope Tackle Centre in Shoreham-by-Sea on January the 24th. The lineup features Mark Edwards on piano, Julian Nicholas on saxophones, Ben Sarfass on the violin, Dave Trigwell on the drums, Neil Corrin on accordion, Terry Pack on bass, Eden Townend on guitar, and vocalist Imogen Ryall, who joined the band for some numbers. She is featured on the opening number of tonight's set, and this is You Will Never See Me Cry.
Thank you. We are going to continue another stunning, beautiful piece at a bit of a tour de force for our wonderful violinist, Ben Sarfass. It's another cinematic theme. This is the theme from Schindler's List by John Williams. Thank you. you, Ben Sarfas. This is a piece of mine, and it's written in tribute to a wonderful singer from Peru called Ima Sumac. She had an extraordinary range of 5 octaves, and when she was growing up in Peru in the mountains, she used to go and listen to the birds singing and try to imitate them and develop this incredibly high-pitched technique, which was something of a mixed blessing, because she was branded a bit of a novelty at times through her life, and had a sort of up and down career, but she was actually a wonderful singer, and she was called Ima Sumac, and this is dedicated to her. Thank you.
Ema, ending tonight's concert set by Mark Edwards' Clogs, featuring Mark Edwards on piano, Julian Nicholas on saxophones, Ben Sarfes on violin, Dave Trigwell on the drums, Neil Corrin on accordion, Terry Pack on the bass, Eden Townend on guitar, and also featured on some of that set was the vocalist Imogen Ryle. Recorded on January the 24th at the South Coast Jazz Festival at the Rope Tackle Centre in Shoreham-by-Sea. And for more information, check out the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph, on FM, online and on digital radio. Well, that's almost the end of the show. On next week's Jazz Lineup, a very special performance from high-energy big band Loose Tubes, recorded at this year's Gateshead International Jazz Festival. And plenty more jazz on Radio 3 with jazz record requests at 9 p.m. tonight, plus Jeffrey Smith's jazz also later on tonight, and that's at midnight. And on Monday night at 11, Jez Nelson looks ahead to UNESCO's International Jazz Day on April the 30th by celebrating the depth and breadth of the music across the world, featuring a performance from Wayne Horvitz's Pan-European Orchestra, plus an exclusive track from American trombonist Robin Eubanks. Well, we end with the new album Beauteous Tales and Offbeat Stories. It comes from Finnish piano trio led by Kari Aikonen, and this is L'avant-midi d'une elfe. Till next time, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye.